Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I'd like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Given the fact that we're winding up summer, unofficially, I would say, because summer really doesn't wind up until the mid of September. And the kids are all back to school. Little ones going to kindergarten. Older ones going to grade school. Even older ones going to high school. And the young adults going to college. Well, I thought I'd read a little essay about just that, Taking Your Freshman to College, written by Bruce Cameron, known for his book, which was later made into a TV show with John Ritter, entitled Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. The essay is entitled How to Say Bye to Your Freshman. And Bruce writes, when dropping your kid off at college, don't gush or give advice and save your tears for the parking lot. For parents of college-bound students, D-Day is fast approaching. D, in this case, is for departure, for decreasing the number of children at home, and for debt, too. But you'll get to enjoy that one for many months to come. Freshman orientation begins soon, and after the final days of farewell parties, of packing and loading and fretting, of last-minute lists and purchases, orientation sounds wonderful, yet you've never been so disoriented in your life. Now, I'm an orientation veteran, having already moved my daughter out of my life and into the start of hers. It's an odd sensation. For 18 years, you've been telling your child not to talk to strangers, and now she's going to live with them. It's an interesting drive to school, leaving the house. She's just a high school kid who's making off with all your towels. But when you arrive, she'll be a college student. Her conversation is along the way. It's actually more of a manic monologue. Seems designed to support the thesis, I am the center of the universe. This is her moment, so I suggest you silently bear even the most provocative comments. Maybe next summer, instead of working, I'll go like hitchhike across Europe. Your thoughts are probably focused on the titanic changes you'll be facing at the end of this journey. No more insomnia because she's half an hour late for curfew. You'll sleep soundly because she is out all night. Her visits home will be celebrations characterized by hugging and laundry. Her mood will falter a little as you drive onto campus. Let's go in and find your dorm assignment first, you'll suggest. I know it, she'll snap back. She's under great stress, so don't let this get to you. She wants to appear as if she has everything under control, even though she is actually feeling completely lost. Let me give you some tips on what not to do in these final moments. Don't gush over the roommate, even though you are so relieved to see that she is of the same gender that you are nearly euphoric. Your relationship with your daughter's roommate is completely irrelevant and will be confined in the future to brief phone conversations in which she will claim not to have seen your daughter for days. Don't talk to the resident advisor about anything. It might make you feel better to explain that your child has milk allergies, but your daughter will never forgive you. Don't tell her to eat breakfast every day and study in the library where she won't be distracted by dorm noise. Those were your mistakes. Kids go to college to learn from their own mistakes. And finally, don't say goodbye in her room, where she will be uncomfortably aware of other people and will need to act aloof. Take her out to the parking lot, where she can give you a real hug and where you can sob uncontrollably. You'll feel much better. Words of wisdom from Bruce Cameron, how to say bye to your freshman. Boy, I went through that a lot. Not this year, though. Not this year. But many times, one little story. Taking my oldest daughter, St. Mary's of Notre Dame, and of course, the same thing we experienced. Barely talked to us, very blasé, very indifferent and so forth, and going through the orientation programs with other students and with other parents and so forth. And we kind of felt that, well, she's not paying any attention to us. Let's go do something and have a little bite to eat. Well, came back to find her crying in her dorm room. Well, what's the matter, Beth? You left me. You left me. You didn't talk to me for 4 hours. How could I not leave you? So there was a bit of tenderness there, which is kind of funny. Very, very limited, but a bit of tenderness, which is kind of interesting. But that was, you know, you look back, it was fun times, you know, getting the carpet down on the floor and getting the dorm assigned, meeting the roommates, some of which we were happy to meet, some which we were happy, which we didn't meet, basically. But that's how that goes, I guess. And time marches on. So everybody has to experience it. Once, twice, I think we experienced it. Decades of times is what it was. But anyway. Well, a lot of fun things going on. Of course, next week we have the opportunity of having one of our favorite ladies on our show, and that's Sister Rosemary Connolly, the Executive Director of Misericordia. And on September 9th, next Sunday, very special day, it's the 32nd Annual Misericordia Family Fest, Fun for All Ages, Sunday, September 9th. All proceeds support Misericordia's programs for children and adults with developmental disabilities. The 32nd Annual Misericordia Family Fest, a day that offers food and drink, live entertainment, children's games, shopping, and more for the whole family on Sunday, September 9th from 11 to 6. It's right on Misericordia's campus, which is the 6300 North Ridge, just south of Devon, and there's parking, free parking in the S&C Electric parking lot with shuttle bus service from the parking lot, which is just east of Ridge. Misericordia offers exceptional programs for more than 600 children and adults with mild to profound developmental disabilities from diverse racial, religious, and socioeconomic backgrounds. This year, Misericordia must raise $13 million for costs not covered by the state of Illinois. Additionally, Misericordia has moved forward with construction projects in order to welcome some of the 500 individuals on its waiting list. Obviously, a lot of construction going on at Misericordia, and certainly a great, great day and for a great cause. The mission of Misericordia Heart of Mercy is to support individuals with developmental disabilities in maximizing their level of independence and self-determination within an environment that fosters spirituality, dignity, respect, and enhancement of quality of life. We promote development of natural family and community support, community awareness, education, and advocacy. At Misericordia, we look upon each one of our children and adults with mental disabilities as a person with individual needs, feelings, aspirations, limitations, and gifts. Each resident of Misericordia is a unique, loving, and loved person made by God with a purpose in life. No matter how wrapped in mystery that purpose seems to us, we are committed to making each day the best day for them as well as their families and friends. And what a beloved lady Sister Rosemary is. It's been kind of a tradition that we have, having Sister Rosemary on our show. We always have her on for Candy Days in March and April, and we always have her on for Family Fest in the first week or so in September, and anything else that pops up during the year. But a great group of people. Lois Gates, of course, a great lady who helps Sister Rosemary, and all the great staff there, but very dedicated to a great cause. And again, that's the 9th of September, Sunday, from 11 to 6, the 31st Annual Misericordia Family Fest, a day that offers food and drink, live entertainment, children's games, shopping, and more for the whole family. So if you need information, give Misericordia a call at 773-273-2766 or email misericordia.com. Certainly a worthwhile thing to do, a great day for your family to come out to Misericordia and really enjoy themselves. So something that you don't want to miss. And of course, with summer winding up, the unofficial chronology of summer, a little essay about the arc of August, as August, we say goodbye to August. August wanes. The arc of August is unmistakable and is on the wane. Even in these languid days, something stirs. The light shifts. The sky begins to look different somehow. Occasionally, a gust of wind blows cold. Where did that come from? August is a month of endless contradictions. It is mellow and slow, but with a quickening pace. It is sultry, but the evenings can bring a chill. August is a month of endings and new beginnings. Sometimes they clash. End of summer markdowns crowd store shelves alongside back-to-school sale must-haves. Swimsuits, 70% off. Oh, and how about a dictionary or two? Please buy, retailers plead, especially this year. Please buy anything at all. Baseball is still sizzling in this town, not on the north side, and not just because of August heat. Fields of dreams indeed. Chicago boys of summer are warming things up. On the south side, threatening to steal the spotlight from the big men in pads and helmets. They're out on their fields, too, sweating buckets because it's still pretty hot. To remind us that autumn's blaze is about to burst forth. American poets have captured August well. Ezra Pound described butterflies already yellow with August. And Robert Lowell wrote of a mildewed day in latter August when the hay came creaking to the barn. August is overripe. It is succulent tomatoes and leaves not yet fallen, but beginning to loosen their grip. When Rome ruled the world, the ancients called these cunicularis dies, the days of the dogs, because the dog star Sirius shone brightest in the heavens through much of August. There was Sirius shining like a brilliant jewel at the throat of the big dog constellation Canis Major. Dog days have nothing to do with the lazy dogs lolling about and their human companions feeling dog-tired in August. Dog days are written in the stars. But over time, they have come to symbolize sultry heat and something unsettling in the air. John Brady's early 19th century analysis of the calendar Clavis Calendaria described dog days when the seas boiled, wine turned sour, dogs grew mad, and all creatures became languid, causing to man burning fevers, hysterics, and frenzies. Well, frenzies be gone. August is over. September stirs, eager for center stage. Behind the big, white, puffy summer clouds are flat striations searing the azure sky like fingers waving a bittersweet farewell. Adieu, August. Back to school. That wasn't very upbeat, but anyway, that being said, you know, of course, one of the great poems that we were introduced to by Mary Schmeek was another American poet, Mary Oliver. We have read this before on the show, entitled The Summer Day. Very languid summer day, actually. Mary writes, "Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away." I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Beautiful summer poem, This Summer Day, by Mary Oliver. Well, I'm driving my studio producer, Josh, wild here because I'm pausing between my sentences here a little bit. I've been trying to do that. So there's, you would think that it's dead silence or dead time. That's what we say in the radio business, dead time. Well, it's not dead time. It's time to maybe think a little bit between talking. What did my grandfather used to say? God gave you two ears and one mouth so you can listen twice as much as you talk. Not everybody adheres to that philosophy, but it's certainly well worthwhile. But that being said, we have a fun show today. Of course, I think you've all heard that Romney is a Republican candidate for for president. Do we have to belabor that fact? And the Cubs and the Sox, well, the Cubs are effectively out of it. They have been for 2 months. But the Sox are going strong. Playing Detroit, this is a tough weekend here. And Labor Day is in a couple days. Boy, summer went fast, didn't it? Jeez, kids are back to school, and here we are. But this is the start of the fall theater season, which is always fun. And a lot of great theater to be had in Chicago. And we'll go over and talk a little bit about some of the great shows that are going to be coming up. But it went fast. But we still have some nice warm weather into fall. Leaves will turn a bit. Probably a little more prematurely than normally because we had such a dry season. But hopefully those bushes and the grass and the trees will come back. But they should be beautiful. And we'll continue to do what we do. And let's try to have everyone enjoy a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, we're going to listen to a little music from the CD, The Best of Chad and Jeremy. We see them sometimes on the PBS specials with all the great English groups. Had some great songs, a summer song, Distant Shores, Yesterday's Gone, Willow Weep for Me, and, of course, Roger and Hammerstein's great song from Carousel, If I Loved You. But certainly we might as well play a summer song one more time. Why not? From Chad and Jeremy. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. Must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain
against my window pane. I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. And dream of you.
A Summer Song by Chad and Jeremy. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Profiles Theater opens its 24th season with the Midwest premiere of Sweet and Sad by Richard Nelson. Profiles Theater announces the Midwest premiere of Sweet and Sad by Richard Nelson, opening the company's 2012-2013 season. Sweet and Sad, directed by Joe Yarhausen, featuring co-artistic director Daryl Cox, runs through October 7th. Performances are held at Profiles' newest venue, the main stage, 4139 North Broadway. With Sweet and Sad, Tony Award-winning playwright Richard Nelson continues his series of plays exploring the immediate present and the ever-changing state of the nation. Over Sunday brunch on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the Apple family finds themselves talking about loss, remembrance, and the family struggle to maintain its moral equilibrium in a world that no longer reflects its values. I'm so pleased Profiles is doing Sweet and Sad, especially in the midst of this election year, says playwright Richard Nelson, as I wrote in a postscript to the play. In times like our own, when human voices seem more disembodied than ever, where words seem pulled from their meanings and turned into rants and weapons, the theater can, I believe, be a necessary home for human talk. That is, a place where human beings talk about their worries, confusions, fears, and loves. And where they also listen. And on the line with us right now is the Jeff Award-winning director who has directed such hits as Neil LaBute's In a Dark House, Adam Rapp's Blackbird, and David Mamet's Water Engine and Sexual Perversity in Chicago. Joe is the founder and co-artistic director with Daryl Cox of Profiles Theater, one of the driving forces in the world of Chicago theater, and now directing the Midwest premiere of Richard Nelson's Sweet and Sad through October 7th at Profiles' newest venue, the main stage, 4139 North Broadway. On the line with us right now is Joe Yarhausen. Joe, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Welcome. I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, you've had such great success at Profiles, and certainly congratulations on this latest premiere that you have, Sweet and Sad. Very contemporary, very touching, and very meaningful play.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's very different for us in a lot of ways. People who are, you know, more familiar with Profiles, you know, might remember us well from Killer Joe a couple of years ago.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's pretty rough play, and we've done a lot of plays through the years that you know, can sometimes be controversial and shake people up. So with Sweet and Sad, it's really not plot driven. There's no big, you know, there's certainly, you know, no violence. Language is not upsetting, but it's a very adult play. It deals with very contemporary issues, and I think what we found such a pleasant surprise about it is because it wasn't plot driven. It's just about people talking, and I think anyone can identify with it, no matter where you come from. If you've ever grown up in a family and you sat around the dinner table and you listened to your parents talk about politics and their fears and their family squabbles, you'll relate to it, and their conversations are absolutely fascinating.
Well, I came from an Irish-Italian family. There was more yelling than there was conversation.
Exactly. So not a lot of yelling, but occasionally, you know, that's the thing. You get a family together, and I think that's one of the surprising things is that family members can say things to each other sometimes, and you know, within 30 seconds, all is forgiven, and you move on. It's a very unique relationship you really don't have with anybody else in your life.
You know, there's a reality to it, too, because we've all experienced it, Joe. You know, I think that theater, I think one of the aims of theater is, at least my philosophy, is to stimulate and engage the audience's imagination, or stimulate and engage their creativity, or stimulate and engage their intellect. And what you have here is just the reality of ordinariness, but it does just that.
Exactly, and I think the beauty of it is through talk, just through simple conversations, these characters tell these stories. I mean, it's full of stories. People sitting around talking about, there was this, one of the characters tells a ghost story about a theater where he was working, and the story is so vivid, it makes you actually feel like, ooh, I'm with that guy in that theater, and I think I can feel the presence of that ghost that he's telling in this story as well. And the whole play is just full of great stories and anecdotes like that one.
Does the simplicity of that itself, Joe, and you as a director, must must feel this, where you see the audience who have experienced this on a regular basis or an irregular basis, but you know they've all experienced sitting around with their family talking and whatever, that it allows them more accessibility to both the play and the actors.
Yeah, I think so. One of the nicest compliments that I've heard several times from audience members as they leave is, you know, I felt like I was sitting there at the table with them, and you know, I can smell the food that they're eating at this brunch, and you know, it made me want to go up there and you know and eat with them and chime in on some of these conversations.
Well, you can do it much better than I can, of course. But just explain for our audience what it's all about.
Well, essentially, it's set on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. It's not a 9/11 play. I think a lot of times, you know, people go, "Oh, is this going to be something that's you know, going to be about all this political issues of 9/11?" And that's just a part of it. The idea is Richard Nelson is going to write a series of four plays, all about this family of apples that live in Rhinebeck, New York. It's about 100 miles outside of New York City, and each play takes place in real time. It's, you know, about an hour and 40 minutes of just, you know, these people having dinner. And the idea is that each year he'll come back and revisit this family, and we'll just sort of check in and see where they are now. Mm. So he's already written one play called That Hopey Changey Thing in 2010. That took place on election eve. And so that's what they were talking about that day, is the elections. And so this play takes place on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. So that's always in the background. There's always, you know, you always sort of feel that presence where they know they're going to go to this memorial, that their uncle, who's an actor, is going to do a reading. And so that's the reason they've all gotten together on this particular day, is to come for this reading. And it's just sort of, you know, the feelings and memories that this 10th anniversary evokes for them.
The play itself takes place almost in a real time, where it's contemporary. We're not necessarily looking back or looking forward. We're looking right at that particular point in time.
Exactly. When he wrote the play, he was writing updates for it all the way to the night it opened. It opened on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. So the idea is he wanted to create a play that was so contemporary, you might hear a reference in the play that you know, you'd heard on the radio that day. Now, of course, we're producing the play a year later, so we don't have that advantage, but that's what he really wants to create, is just, you know, this is right here and now, and we're very much aware, all the audience in the room is very much aware that this is right now. This is not, you know, looking back and you know, sentimentalizing anything. This is who we are today.
And of course, you have your ensemble members there. Of course, Daryl Cox always does a great job. Eric Berger and the uncle's plays by one of the great, I would say, I don't know if I should say unsung, but certainly very dependable actor, and that's Bob Brueller.
That's right, yeah, and Bob is absolutely amazing in this. It's a perfect part for him. He plays Uncle Benjamin, who is suffering from severe memory loss. So he's the one who's going to do this reading of the poem at this 9/11 memorial, and you know, it's sweet and sad is what it is in knowing that, you know, he was once, you know, this really great actor, and he still is, but you know, it's sad to watch him, you know, losing his memory, and memory is definitely a theme that runs throughout the play, the way we remember things and how should we remember things, and even, you know, 9/11 enters into that in terms of, you know, how should we continue to remember this, you know, very tragic event in our history.
As you choose the various plays, you and Daryl choose the various plays that are going to be performed by Profiles Theater, do you have a consortium of people that input, or do you guys kind of sit down over a couple cocktails and say, you know, here's a list, what do you think?
Well, we always want a feedback from everybody in the group. We have a couple of literary managers who, you know, sort of weed through things that, you know, they know our taste, and they know, well, okay, this is really not something you guys are going to like, but they always sort of go, well, here's something a little different, take a look at it. So we sort of start with that, and then, you know, then Daryl and I read everything, you know, that's been recommended to us, and then we sit and find the one that appeal to us most as artists. You know, what is something I'd like to see? Is this something I would be excited to go into the theater and watch myself? So if it answers that criteria, that's where we start. We don't, you know, choose plays going, well, are there enough parts for our acting ensemble? We don't worry about any of that. We just start with, do we care about the story? Does it touch me in some way? And is this something that, you know, I would want to go see?
You've developed a relationship with the great playwright Neil LaBute over the years and so forth. He's become an integral part of Profiles Theater. Will he continue that relationship moving forward?
He will, absolutely. Our goal is to still try to produce at least one new work by Neil each year. We did a few years ago. We did a whole season of his work. So we, you know, for 1 year, that's all you saw was Neil LeVue plays. And now we've sort of gone, well, let's make a commitment to at least continue that once per year. And Neil actually made the decision to join us as a resident artist this season. So that we were very excited to welcome him aboard in that capacity.
Given the opportunities, is there anything out there, Joe, that you haven't done or would like to do or aspire to do as far as directing?
You know, I'm very open. I don't have any sort of I have to do this play. You notice that the majority of what we do is new work. I mean, that's what excites us. So it's not like I have this, you know, burning desire like I need to go do Streetcar one day. That's, you know, I'm less interested in doing works that have already been done and have a proven track record. I'm much more fascinated with, you know, the new work that's out there. There are, you know, some fabulous playwrights that are writing great work every day, and I'm always excited when we find that new hidden gem that nobody knows about.
I thought maybe you'd say you'd like to do a musical like Hairspray or something like that.
Yeah, no, I don't think you'll see any musicals popping up any time soon, you know. It's not that I don't enjoy good music. I love Sondheim, but I can't see myself ever doing one myself. It just seems like, well, I'm much more contemporary, you know, realism, and people just don't break into songs usually.
It doesn't fit the profile of profiles, what you're saying.
You're right.
Now, have you done any acting yourself?
I have, actually. When I started this back in 1988, sort of ages me there. I started primarily as an actor. That was my main goal, was to act. And so I acted in quite a few plays. So it's been a couple of years now since I've gotten on stage, and I would still be interested in that. I would still like to get up and do some things again. But right now the primary focus has been directing, and I find that the most satisfying.
Well, keep on doing this because everybody else is enjoying it too.
Well, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Profiles Theater, founded in 1988 by Artistic Director Joe Yarhouse, joined shortly thereafter by Artistic Director Daryl Cox, was formed as an actor-driven theater ensemble dedicated to creating provocative and emotionally truthful productions. Passionate about shaping an original vision for new works, they focused on performing world, American, and Midwest premieres, as well as rarely performed plays. Critically acclaimed hits such as Blackbird, Fat Pig, and Graceland, and the multiple Jeff Award-winning production of Killer Joe established Profiles as a destination for challenging and edgy theater. The company's unique collaboration with playwright Neil LeVue led the ensemble to perform an entire season of his plays in 2007-2008. Now a resident artist at Profiles, LeVue remains an unequivocal artistic influence on the ensemble. Driven by an undiminished appetite for creating honest and resonant theater, Profiles still seeks to present work that illuminates the determination and resiliency of the human spirit. Profiles Theater announces the Midwest premiere of Sweet and Sad by Richard Nelson, opening the company's 2012-2013 season. Sweet and Sad, directed by Joe Yarhouse and featuring co-artistic director Daryl Cox, runs through October 7th. Performances are held at Profiles' newest venue, the main stage, 4139 North Broadway. And on the line with me right now is the director of Sweet and Sad, Joe Yarhouse. Joe, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information about Profiles?
Yes, for tickets or further information, give us a call at 773-549-1815. You can also visit our website, profilestheater.org, and that's theater ending in an R-E. And that gives you a full description of all the shows we have planned for this season, further dates and information about Sweet and Sad, as well as our next play that's called After by Chad Beckham. That's opening pretty quickly as well. It's going to open September 5th. So we got a pretty great lineup here. We have two theater spaces now there on Broadway. 4147 Broadway is the alley stage. 4139 is the main stage. And our goal is to keep shows bouncing back and forth from those two spaces all year long.
Well, you'll have a busy fall, and let's keep on each other's radar. So if we can get the word out, we're happy to do it.
That sounds great. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Joe.
Take care.
Joe Yarhouse, the co-founder and the artistic director of Profiles Theater, his latest and newest premiere, Sweet and Sad, through October 7th at Profiles' newest venue, the main stage, 4139 North Broadway. Again, for information, 773-549-1815. What a very talented man. Certainly a lot of things going on at Profiles. He's got another performance coming up of After, and there's a lot of things going on up there. So if you have the opportunity, make sure you stop by. Get back to our music of Chad and Jeremy, one of my favorites, Distant Shores. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
the starry lights. You came for me to follow.
Jeremy, Distant Shores. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The 34th annual Chicago Jazz Festival lineup is announced. Local and national talent fill stages throughout downtown. The best reason to look forward to the end of summer is this year's complete lineup of free music at the 34th annual Chicago Jazz Festival, August 30th through September 2nd. Joining headline acts such as Roy Haynes, Diana Reeves, and Alan Toussaint are a vast array of local, national, and international performers on stage in Millennium Park, four stages in Grand Park, and with the earliest performances August 30th in the Chicago Cultural Center, 78 East Washington. And the Chicago Jazz Festival announced artist-in-residence Ken Vandermark to play throughout the free festival. The Chicago Jazz Festival announces saxophonist and composer Ken Vandermark as its artist-in-residence for this year's festival. The Chicago Jazz Festival exclusively names Chicago artists for its artist-in-residence program, now in its 10th year, commissioning large-scale compositions and presenting multiple performance opportunities over the course of the four-day festival. A Chicago-based recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship, Vandermark has focused on expanding the possibilities of improvised and composed music for most of the last three decades. And on the line with us right now is a civic leader, concerned citizen, graduate from the University of Michigan, proud White Sox fan, especially this weekend against Detroit, a woman sincerely dedicated in bringing only the best to the citizens of Chicago and its guests, and the director of public relations for the Mayor's Office of Special Events, now presenting the 34th annual Chicago Jazz Festival through Sunday, September 2nd, our good pal, the great Cindy Gazziola. Cindy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. I don't know how I can ever live up to your introductions.
And, always a pleasure, kiddo. And boy, you got a busy weekend here, huh?
We do. We do. I mean, we've launched the festival with a couple of intimate, you know, quite a few intimate performances over at the Cultural Center. We've had our Millennium Park nights, and now two full days here in Grant Park, four stages. The future of jazz, because we once again have this lovely Chicago Community Trust Young Jazz Lion Stage, which are high school and college age kids. So they get a real chance to be professionals for the weekend and hobnob with names like Diane Reeves and Alan Toussaint.
How much fun is that for those kids, like from Lakeview High School and Saucedo Scholastic Academy and Curie High School? What a great opportunity for
them. What a great opportunity. What a great thing to put on your college app, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Jeez. I don't know if they can get into the University of Michigan because it's so tough to get in there.
I don't get in there anymore. Life's gotten a lot harder in the million years since I went to college.
As all industries in Chicago have had economic struggles, so has the City of Chicago and its Department of Cultural Affairs. Yet the Jazz Fest, of course, bigger and better than ever because people want that. People flock to it. And yet, here it is, a free festival for everybody.
Still the best price of all.
Isn't it the truth?
We jokingly say free 99.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still so important that this office and everything with cultural affairs as well, that we try to bring as much free programming to folks or, you know, really reasonably priced, like a $10 thing. This one this weekend is all free. This is the granddaddy of the festivals. And, you know, Jazz Festival started all the other music festivals that we have done over the years. And it's important that we keep a Labor Day tradition free and open to everybody.
34 years young, of course. You were still a student at Our Lady of the Hopeless Miracle High School. And now here we are all these years later, and some great, great acts coming, of course. Roy Haynes, as we said before, Diana Reeves, Alan Toussaint, Frankie Durone's going to be there.
Yeah. No, I mean, Frankie Durone, you know, he's celebrating 80 years, and I'm reading the quotes about him as, I guess, Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra calling you the singer-singer. You must really be the singer-singer, because I would trust those two.
I would say so.
No, and you know, it's all ages like that, too. So there we're speaking about somebody who's 80, Roy Haynes, 87. And then we've got these teenagers from high school. So it's sort of everything in between. We saw an act at the Cultural Center, 30 years old, playing music from the 20s, because he just has an appreciation for it in Chris Madsen's quartet. We have, you know, tons of local entertainment, because that's always been very important for this festival, to show off this great jazz community Chicago's so fortunate to have. You know, we know there's New Orleans, but outside of New Orleans, Chicago's probably the most predominant jazz musician community. Mm-hmm. And then folks coming from, you know, we've got Latin flavored, we've got Japanese, we've got Eastern Europe, so many folks coming internationally to us. So that's kind of exciting, too.
Well, interesting, because as you just said, Sin, that jazz spans not only generations but cultures. We have Japanese people who enjoy jazz, Far Eastern and so forth. All different types of cultures enjoy it.
France has long been a jazz hub. We've got when Ken Vandermark, one of his four performances, because that's what our artist in residence does, they do. He's bringing in musicians from, just name a few, we've got people from Poland, Sweden, Ukraine, you know, then there's some Chicagoans, we even have a New Yorker in there, so kind of all over the place, and that's really nice to see that this great American music form is international.
How do you go about choosing their acts?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, every year there's a Jazz Festival Committee, and it's one of our program people here at Cultural Affairs and Special Events, and the Jazz Institute is a major partner on this event, has been since 1979 when it began, and, you know, they take a look at what's happening currently. They look at great performers who've performed for us in the past, and maybe it's been a few years. There's the notion to still keep 50-60% of it local. So it's a arduous task, and it will begin for next year starting in October.
Really, really. Yeah. So that's when you're preparing for it. What have you seen over your tenure, or what you've heard, how this jazz festival has changed from its beginnings as to what it is today? And then what is the hope for the future, where it could or possibly go to?
Well, you know, the very first one, because it was the only music festival, it actually had a number of blues acts in it.
Okay.
So I think that's what led to, you know, 5 years later, there was a Chicago Blues Festival, which is also hugely popular, not just in Chicago, but it's become the destination, much like the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage or Lala or Bonnaroo. It's something you do. If you've never been to Chicago, you do the Blues Festival, you do the Jazz Festival. What we saw then is forms of music that were in that week-long event as the first time kind of having their own places throughout our calendar. And what we've seen, and while, you know, it's not those 7 days anymore, we've taken it, we were two half days, two full days, and then it was three full days, and now we've got this new formula in the last few years where we've done intimate settings like the Chicago Cultural Center's rooms. There's always a performance down at Roosevelt University in Gans Hall, so there's something kind of very unique, and you know, hopefully all the young people who are downtown are getting a chance to see it. And then we've also got the Pritzker Pavilion and Grant Park, so it's been this sort of multi-layer place. While Grant Park is the main home, and that's where the true festival setting is, we have six restaurants, we have our sponsor booths, our Jazz Institute booth, all kinds of different things where people can do in between. It's now a multifaceted, multi-place event.
And I don't want to underline this, it's an family event, too. It's not just for adults.
Oh,
I mean, it's great for the young people to come out and enjoy
the
day.
It's very important, and I think, you know, if you're got a 10, 11, 12-year-old, and they're looking up on stage and seeing someone who kind of looks like them but just a couple years older, you know, might inspire someone to pick up an instrument and go into high school and say, I want to do that. And that's, you know, we talked about college applications, so that's another good thing to have on your college application and maybe even a scholarship from that.
Sure, sure. You know, I have the opportunity of serving on the board at Roosevelt University's College of the Performing Arts, and Gans Hall is such a great venue for any kind of artistic presentation. Yeah. But it's an integral part because the music school there in the conservatory produces such great, great young artists, as do all of the universities in our Columbia or DePaul or Northwestern, wherever. And we're very fortunate to have those young, talented people here because there's always a place for them to exhibit their artistic talents.
I agree. I mean, and look at this. This shows them, well, you know, this year our couple of colleges are Northwestern and Northern Illinois, so it's not always, you know, maybe it's DePaul 1 year. DePaul actually did a couple of years with us. It's been Columbia. It's been multiple opportunities for the college groups to be part of this event.
Could this go on longer? Could we make this a whole week, or is it in the 4 or 5 days it is? Do you think that's sufficient?
Well, you know, I think it's ambitious. It depends on if it would be something in multiple locations. And what we have done with Jazz Week this year, we had a number of performances that we tied to what we call Jazz Festival Week. So there was something at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and that was a small ticketed event. Monday through Wednesday, we had Piano Forte, and that was at the Fine Arts Building in the salon there. There's, you know, events. We did our preview on Daily Plaza. So we've kind of found a way to stretch the week. And then the Jazz Institute of Chicago always does this jazz club tour. And again, that's a paid item. But you have a trolley that can take you to 16 different jazz clubs. So it's kind of nice. I don't have to worry about where I'm parking. I can just, you know, enjoy myself, enjoy the music, go if I want to go to the next club or if I want to stay at the one I'm at.
Sure. And it gives an opportunity to sow that seed of the interest in jazz, because after this is over with, we still have all these great venues in and around Chicago that people can enjoy, and they're going to want to come try something else because they got a taste of it now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got to support these small clubs because I think they're a vital part of our music scene. You know, whether it's Andy's Jazz Club or the Green Mill that everybody knows, or maybe something small like the Red Peppers Masquerade Lounge, or this, you know, even the Drake Hotel was part of our event this year. Katarina's Southside Community Arts Center did part of the trolley tour last night. So it's important if we support Chicago musicians and where they're playing, they stay here. Yeah. They might travel out for something, but if they're living here, then it's one more thing we're known for, you know, and that's great.
Well, we're fortunate to have you pressing it, and Mary May and Michelle, of course, doing such a great job as the Director of the Cultural Affairs and Special Events Department of the City of Chicago. And, you know, keep on doing what you're doing, Kitta, because we all enjoy it.
Well, we appreciate it, and we hope folks will come out and enjoy. You know, it's a Labor Day tradition. You got to come out.
Absolutely, absolutely. The 34th Annual Chicago Jazz Fest is presented by the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events and programmed by the Jazz Institute of Chicago. The Young Jazz Lion Stage is made possible by the Chicago Community Trust. The Chicago Community Trust is a member of the Chicago Jazz Partnership and a dedicated leader in the collaborative effort to expand arts learning and performance opportunities for all students. The 34th Annual Chicago Jazz Festival lineup is announced. The best reason to look forward to the end of summer is this year's complete lineup of free music at the Jazz Fest, joining headline acts such as Roy Haynes, Diane Reeves, and Alan Toussaint, a vast array of local, national, and international performers on stage in Millennium Park, 4 stages in Grant Park, with the earliest performances in the Chicago Cultural Center. And the line with us right now is the great Gatziolis, of course, who makes things happen in the city of Chicago. Cindy, always a pleasure. What's the next thing coming up from the Mayor's Office of Cultural Affairs and Special Events?
We still have some summer dance dates. We've got the World Music Festival. Then October is not only Fashion Focus, but Chicago Artist Month. And then our Franken Plaza Halloween activity. We never sleep.
Never do. And we got the White Sox. They might be in a World Series this year. You never know.
I hope we have that extra burden in October. That would be nice. That would not be a burden.
Always a pleasure, kiddo. Take care of yourself. God bless. Say hello to everybody for us, and thanks for taking a little time.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, Cindy. Cindy Gatziolis from the Mayor's Office of Special Events. Of course, that's now called the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, and the 34th Annual Chicago Jazz Fest, of course, downtown, Millennium Park, Grant Park, Chicago Cultural Center, Roy Haynes, Diane Reeves, Alan Toussaint, and those great young people. I have to mention that, too. The Chicago Jazz Festival Young Lions Stage. It brings the next generation of artists to the forefront. It's set just east of the Jazz and Heritage Stage at Lakeshore Drive. Performance beginning at 12 noon with high school and college-age jazz musicians. The lineup comes from Lakeview High School, Saucedo Scholastic Academy Ensemble, Curie Metro Jazz Ensemble, Evanston Township High School, Pritzker College Prep Ensemble, NIU Jazz Ensemble. Very talented young people, and they are the stars of tomorrow because they're looking at the stars of today and aspiring to do just that. We're very fortunate to have the opportunity to see them, but it's going to be a great weekend, certainly a great weekend to enjoy all the jazz you want and then take it throughout the year. Go to some of the jazz venues in and around Chicago and enjoy this great music, but it's certainly something fun to do. We're going to be back to the best of Chad and Jeremy. Yesterday's gone. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Summer through, I thought I'd found my dream in you. For me, you were the one, but that was yesterday, and yesterday's gone. We walked together hand in hand, across miles and miles of golden sand. But now it's over and done, 'cause that was yesterday, and yesterday's gone. We had such happiness together, I can't believe it's gone forever. Wait till summer comes again, just begun. I loved you yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Together, I can't believe it's gone forever. Wait until summer comes again. I hope that you remember when our love had just begun. I loved you yesterday, and yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone. Yesterday's gone.
Yesterday's gone. Chad and Jeremy, we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. I want to mention this. Jill Evans from Shout Chicago, great public relations firm, sent me this press release. I want to make sure I get the word out. The Lakeview East Chamber of Commerce is proud to host and produce the 2012 Lakeview East Festival of the Arts. The festival, now in its eighth year, takes place Saturday, September 8th and Sunday, September 9th in Lakeview, a dynamic and diversified neighborhood community rich in culture, history, and the arts, from Belmont Avenue to Roscoe Street. The 2012 Lakeview East Festival of the Arts showcases more than 150 juried artists featuring world-class original paintings, sculptures, photography, furniture, jewelry, and more. In addition to the artist's booth, the festival features live music with beer and wine gardens, an area curated by Project Onward, an interactive urban picnic oasis by Patch Landscaping, interactive children's area featuring a puppet show, and much more. The Lakeview East Festival of the Arts asks for a $5 donation upon entrance, and those donate can be entered to win round-trip tickets to any scheduled destination serviced by Southwest Airlines. The hours are Saturday, September 8th from 10 to 6 and Sunday, September 9th from 10 to 5. For information, LakeviewEastFestivalOfTheArts.com. New to the festival this year is an exhibit curated by Chicago's Project Onward, a studio and gallery dedicated to the creative growth of artists with mental and developmental disabilities. In addition to displaying and selling original works of art, Project Onward's major focus for the weekend will be to provide portrait sittings with Project Onward artists to festival attendees. To learn more about Project Onward, visit projectonward.org/portrait. The Lakeview East Chamber of Commerce also welcomes Patch Landscaping in 2012. Patch Landscaping will be creating an interactive garden area from Roscoe to Hawthorne Streets. The Urban Oasis will feature an oversized chess game, allowing festival attendees to play a chess game that will be on display to all in the garden area. Interesting. Also featured in the colorful picnic-themed area will be rolling hills, a boulder wall where people can sit and relax next to sandboxes filled with children's toys and birch trees as high as 12 feet. Artists in almost every medium are represented, including photography, printmaking, mixed media, ceramics, clay, collage, fiber, glass, sculpture, furniture, and more. Unique and original artwork is for sale in all price ranges. And again, for festival information, go on to the website at lakevieweast.com or call 773-348-8608. Very interesting. Always something to do. And something in September, too. We get this press release. The Museum of Science and Industry to offer free weekdays in September. The kiddies may be back in school, but the Museum of Science and Industry is extending summer fun with free general admission for Illinois residents from 9:30 to 4 every weekday, Monday through Friday, in September, beginning September 4th. To participate, you must be an Illinois resident with proof of address. Of course, the museum is located at 5700 South Lakeshore Drive. Tickets for the Omnimax U-505 submarine onboard tour, the WOW tour, which is a special behind-the-scenes access to various exhibits, smart home, green and wired, and coal mine exhibits are not included in general admission, but may be purchased at the museum's box office. For information or to also purchase tickets online, visit Museum of Science and Industry, MSIChicago.org. So that's a lot of fun, be able to go to the museum. Not have to pay a fee. Some of the other exhibits you have to, but you have to anyway, so enjoy them. Certainly a lot of stuff to do in Chicago. Jazz Fest this weekend, outside. Enjoy the weather, enjoy the jazz, and enjoy the time spent with everybody else. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially I'd like to thank our good pal Cindy Gatziolas. I call her the Great Gatziolas, from the Mayor's Office of Special Events, now presenting the 34th Annual Chicago Jazz Fest through Sunday, September 2nd. A great way to spend and kick off the Labor Day weekend. And, of course, all of the great things that are coming up. For information, go on to the website or visit 312-744-3315 for information. A lot of stuff that the Mayor's Office always does and will continue to do. Mr. Joe Yarhouse, who is the co-founder and artistic director of Profiles Theater, his newest premiere, Sweet and Sad, now premiering through October 7th at Profiles' newest venue, the Main Stage, 4139 North Broadway. For information, 773-549-1815. Very talented man, doing a lot of talented things, and will continue. He's got a busy fall at the Profiles Theater. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
Year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear her name. I know the way. Now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. if we can try with every day to make it better as it grows. Any luck, then I suppose the music